Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Every day, millions of Americans struggle to pay their bills. Some borrow from family and friends, some use their credit cards, and some turn to quick and costly loans offered by payday lending corner stores and payday lending websites. According to a Pew Research Charitable Trust study on payday lending, 12 million Americans take out payday loans every year, spending almost $8 billion. Because interest rates can be as high as 400%, the average customer ends up in debt for 5 months and pays $520 in finance charges. According to the Center for Responsible Lending, a consumer group that opposes payday loans, borrowers pay $3.4 billion in fees every year on payday loans. There are currently 23,000 payday lending storefronts and hundreds of websites. Payday lending is a $50 billion yearly industry. Online payday loans were up 10% last year, and they now make up close to 40% of the total market. The industry says they're providing much-needed cash to those who need it, while critics say payday lending traps borrowers in a cycle of debt. So on today's Your Call, we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by talking about the payday lending industry. How does it work? How is it regulated? Who's making the profits? And are there better alternatives for people who need short-term loans to be tied over until their next paycheck? Today, we're joined by Paul Keel. He covers consumer finance for ProPublica. His work on the foreclosure crisis was featured in the Best Business Writing 2013 book. His e-book is called The Great American Foreclosure Story, and he joins us from New York. Hi, Paul. Welcome back to the show.
Hi.
We're also joined by Gary Rivlin. Gary is an investigative fund reporting fellow with the Nation Institute. His latest book is Broke USA, From Pawn Shops to Poverty, Inc., How the Working Poor Became Big Business. And he's been reporting on the payday lending industry for years. Hi, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Rosa.
Great to have you. And we're joined by Paul Leonard. He's California director of the Center for Responsible Lending, a nonprofit focusing on consumer lending, including bank overdraft and payday loans. And Paul joins us from Oakland. Hi, Paul. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Nice. Well, glad to be here.
Great to have you. And we invited Greg Larson, a spokesman for the California Financial Service Providers Association. This is a group representing 2,000 California payday lenders and check cashing outlets, but we didn't hear back. So, Gary, I want to start off with you. You've been reporting on this for years. Is it safe to say that because so many people are struggling to make ends meet, demand is up at these payday lending stores?
Oh, definitely. There's something interesting that's going on because there's two trends to look at. One, since 2008, there are more people obviously struggling to make ends meet, lost jobs, lost hours, whatever. But at the same time, there's actually been some good news with payday lending in that the consumer advocates are scoring some victories. There were at its peak, I don't know, 38 states, I think it is, that had payday lending, and now it's in the low 30. So on the one hand, in the states where payday lending has been for a long time, those businesses, those stores are doing very well. The problem from the payday lender's point of view is there's less states that are proving receptive to having their businesses within their borders.
And these payday loans are now illegal in 15 states, right, including North Carolina, Georgia, and Pennsylvania.
And along this, you know, New York, Arizona, Oregon, et cetera. Yeah, but you mentioned online payday lending and how big that is. Some of it is that online payday lending is getting into New York and North Carolina and these other states where it's ostensibly illegal. It's just harder to monitor an online site that might be hosted on a Native American land or offshore. Mm. And so what you see happening is where the bricks and mortar payday lenders never had much luck getting into states that didn't change the laws to let them do business there. Now you're seeing the online payday lenders, the Pew study you mentioned at the start of the show, talks a lot about this, that they're thriving in New York State despite a liberal attorney general, despite a usury cap in the state that I think is about 16%. So, you know, online payday lending really is a very scary trend, and they tend to charge more than the bricks and mortar stores.
Online, they charge more than 400%?
Yeah, I've seen a few that are charging. They charge a biweekly fee, and every other week fee that if you state it as an annual percentage rate, as an APR, I've seen them as high as 800%.
Wow.
Online. Actually, there's some states around this country that allow APRs for payday loans of over 500%.
That's amazing. Paul Keel, you cover this for ProPublica. And, I mean, here in San Francisco, these payday lending stores are on so many corners. They've got bright neon lights, pretty bad lighting. And the signs often say payday lending and check cashing. So can you talk about the overlap and the differences between payday lending and check cashing?
I mean, and just the fact that, I mean, the check cashing is you go in there to literally cash a check and you pay a fee for it. And it happens that a lot of these businesses that offer payday loans also offer check cashing. You know, a lot of them offer kind of a suite of services for a certain type of customer, and payday loans is part of it. You know, and those, I think those discussions should be separated, whether check cashing is, you know, check cashing in and of itself is a very different thing from these types of loans.
Okay, so when we say that this is a $50 billion industry, are we specifically talking about payday loans?
I'm not sure about that, but I would guarantee that payday loans for these companies that do offer them would be a big, huge revenue driver for them.
And there's often, they often have generic names. So who's actually behind these payday loans? A lot of the major banks invest in these payday loan stores, but do they own them outright?
Well, no, the ones that you would call a payday loan store, no, those would be mostly independent companies. A number of them are publicly traded. They're quite large. They have, you know, thousands of locations around the country. You know, the banks often do provide credit for these companies to keep them operating. That's kind of an issue. And then separately, you have banks like Wells Fargo and a couple others offering what is essentially a payday product. They don't call it that. They call it deferred deposit product. So it's there's a variety of things that are more or less the same thing that have different names.
And Paul, with your work at the Center for Responsible Lending, you have looked at the people who fund these group or multinationals that fund these payday lending stores. Who's really making the profits here?
With Paul Keel, that most of the payday lending companies are independently financed. Some of them are publicly traded, and Americans, and in some cases even the California pension funds are investors in hedge funds that invest in these companies. As Paul noted, the big banks are frequently providing financing and basically lending them, providing lines of credit and so forth to allow the payday lenders to have credit, to extend the credit. So banks that are essentially being able to borrow money from the Fed at near 0% interest rates are lending the money to the payday lenders at 8% interest rates or 15% interest rates that the payday lenders can turn around and lend out at 459% interest rates here in California. So there is a close relationship, and I would also echo Paul's point about how banks themselves are offering payday lending products. Specifically, Wells Fargo and U.S. Bank here in California are major lenders that are offering products that, while slightly cheaper than the payday products, create the exact same kind of debt trap cycle that we see with storefront payday lenders. Thankfully, the FDIC and the OCC, two national bank regulators, have recently issued proposed guidance that we hope will become a law very quickly that will change the rules and make it impossible for mainstream national banks to be offering these kinds of products.
And Rose, something interesting about the role that the big banks have played, but Paul and Paul are right that they're providing lines of credit, if not providing a payday-like product themselves. But the way payday lending got big in the first place, it's only been around since the early 1990s, and one way is they lobbied state legislators and got permission to move in, but the other way is that the big banks, Wells Fargo, Wachovia, Nations, they provided the seed funding. The biggest chain in this country, Advance America, they went from zero stores to a couple of thousand within a few years because they were able to get $50 million from the big brand name banks. You name a bank and I could tell you what role they've played, J.P. Morgan Chase, et cetera, Bank of America, in the poverty industries, and payday lending is a perfect example of that, in that they provided the capital needed to go from zero to hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, of stores.
Has the federal government done anything to restrict the high fees? Because according to reports, the U.S. Justice Department brought a number of suits against some of these big banks, accusing them of facilitating the loans by providing allegedly predatory lenders with access to their debtors' bank accounts. But Gary, can the federal government do anything here?
Yeah, I mean, yes. Yes and no. The federal government could. In fact, Dick Durbin, powerful senator from Illinois, for years has had a nationwide usury cap, a cap on interest rates that he's proposed to be 36%. But the U.S. government has not done that. And it's mainly state by state where the enabling legislation occurs for payday lenders. But the federal government has played a good role in several ways. Paul mentioned the FDIC years back. They pressured some of these payday lenders or some of these banks to no longer do business with the payday lenders in those states that didn't permit it. The new Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, they've put payday lending on their list of issues to look at. I mean, it's a pretty competitive list with mortgages and student loans and credit cards, debt collectors. There's a lot of hope among advocates that maybe there'd be some reforms, if not outlawing payday products, perhaps capping the number of loan someone could take out in a year, perhaps capping the rates, perhaps creating a law where you can only have one payday loan at a time, because something else that goes on here is you fall behind with one payday lender and you go to a second payday lender to bail yourself out, and suddenly a few months later you owe money to three or four or five payday lenders. That's a fairly common occurrence.
Right, and a $300 payday loan can end up costing over $750 if it's not paid back in time. So Paul Leonard, who's actually using these services? Why are they so popular?
The borrowers who are most likely to take out payday loans are lower income, minority, renter households. They are not the most prominent in terms of overall numbers, but in terms of the likelihood of actually using these kinds of loans. These are, you know, typical households that are in vulnerable financial circumstances. And, you know, I think that they offer the payday loans offer the promise of a short-term, quick and easy fix to a financial problem. But all too often, these loans are being targeted to folks who simply don't have enough income to be able to repay the loan, even if the interest rate were zero. Hmm. And the payday lenders understand this, and this is really at the heart of the payday lending business model. It's making loans to borrowers who can afford a $45 fee every 2 weeks, but can't afford to pay back the full $300 loan here in California without having enough money left over for all of their other routine expenses like food and housing and medical expenses. And so they come back every 2 weeks. They'll pay back the loan and then borrow it right back again. The CFPB put out a study that found a typical household using payday loans took out 10 loans per year. That's similar to what we see here in California. And that while they promise a short-term, a two-week emergency loan product, the data that the CFPB found was that borrowers were in debt for 200 days a year, typically speaking.
200 days a year. That is Paul Leonard. He's California Director of the Center for Responsible Lending, a nonprofit focusing on consumer lending and payday loans. Paul Keel covers consumer finance for ProPublica. His ebook is The Great American Foreclosure Story. And Gary Rivlin is an investigative fund reporting fellow at the Nation Institute. His latest book is Broke USA, From Pawn Shops to Poverty, Inc., How the Working Poor Became Big Business. And today we continue our Agenda for a New Economy series by focusing on the $50 billion payday lending industry. There are now, there are nearly as many payday lending outlets as there are McDonald's and Starbucks combined. Just to give you some perspective, 23,000 of these payday stores, a lot of them charge over 400% interest and trap customers into spiraling debt cycles. So we'd love to hear from you. What questions do you have about this industry? Have you ever used a payday lending store? What was your experience like? And how do you think they should be regulated? They are illegal in 15 states. Here in California, Californians paid loan fees $578 million every year just on loan fees. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. 8255-866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And let's hear from Ken in San Francisco. Hi, Ken. Welcome to the show.
Hey, good morning. Question. We used to have a thing called usury laws, and usury is so hated it was in the Bible. That's question one. And number two, so for time immemorial, this is a bad practice. Two, there used to be the tradition of free bank accounts, free savings account, free checking account, or people would cash their paychecks at, for instance, a liquor store or someplace. What has happened in the world there? Are banks pushing or forcing the lowest income people into these high fee products? Usually they eliminate the free stuff and force people over to this, otherwise they would use the other ways.
Yeah, thank you. Well, Paul Leonard, do you want to take the second question first? Did the majority of people who use these payday lending sites not have bank accounts?
No. In fact, in order to get a storefront payday loan, and in most, even most online payday lenders, require borrowers to have a checking account. It's fundamental to the payday lending business model for two reasons. One is it it essentially form it, the providing a post-dated check or electronically access to a borrower's account will give the payday lender an opportunity to deposit that check on the borrower's next payday. So in effect, that post-dated check or the access to the account becomes a form of collateral that is extraordinarily powerful for the lender. So that's an important thing. With respect to usury, as Gary mentioned earlier, what happened in the late 1990s is the payday lending industry started a state-by-state campaign to essentially get laws enacted in different states that would allow this payday lending model to exist. It's one of the few financial products that is actually found to be codified in state laws. State by state. And the payday lending industry is a very well-funded industry. They hire the best lobbyists in Sacramento. They spend an enormous amount of money on campaign contributions and have an enormous amount of influence in creating favorable laws and regulations that allow the payday lending industry to exist in 30-some states here in the United States, including here in California.
And they sold it based on a myth. I actually went back to a couple of states, Ohio and North Carolina, just to look at how this came about, to look at the lobbying, to look at the arguments they made. And basically, they sold it as an emergency product that, you know, on the surface makes sense. Your car breaks down. You need it to get to work every day. You need a quick $300. Why not have this quick, easy-to-get loan? Takes 5 minutes to get $300, get your car fixed, you keep working, you pay it back, and everybody is happy. So they sold it as an emergency loan, but as one of the Pauls mentioned earlier, the average person is using this 10 or 11 times a year, which isn't an emergency. It's just a very expensive way to balance your checkbook. And I even was told by the actual paid spokesman for the payday lending industry, a good source for this, that the average customer, according to the payday lending industry, takes 2 or 3 months to pay back that loan. So you borrow $300 instead of paying $45 in fees. 2 weeks later, you end up paying $200 in fees on that $300 loan, $300 in fees on that $300 loan. So the very way they sold it ended up not being true.
Hmm. Well, and Paul Leonard, if you do have a bank account, how difficult or easy is it to get a loan for a couple hundred dollars?
Well, you know, most Americans use credit cards to serve this kind of cash flow purpose. That's the overwhelming use of sort of small dollar emergency credit is through credit cards. Clearly, some borrowers who are resorting to using payday loans have exhausted existing credit card limits, so that may not be an option, and it raises a fundamental question as to whether or not providing more credit to a borrower who has already exhausted existing available alternatives is a good product and is doing that customer any favors, particularly when, as Gary mentioned, the likelihood is they're going to get caught into a deeper and deeper trap of debt that they can't get out of, but will continue to make these two-week payments because the payday lender can simply deposit their check and collect on that payment, or if they don't have sufficient funds in their account, you know, generate a more expensive overdraft fee. One of the really one of the consequences of payday lending that we have found is that borrowers end up often losing their checking accounts because they receive too many overdraft fees and ultimately are forced to close their accounts either on their own will or on the part of the banking institution.
Well, we have an email from a listener who doesn't want us to use his name, but he says, I've been trapped in payday loan debt and essentially trying to pay off the same principal for 4 years. I've begged my credit union that I have been a member of for 25 years repeatedly for aid, but my applications are always rejected due to my poor credit history. What is insane is that every 3 months, I pay the equivalent of my principal and interest and still owe the same amount. My credit union deems me too risky a lender for their shareholders to lend me the same amount with a fair interest rate. I'm paying $400 in interest a month, but I can't be trusted to pay $200 or $100 a month to borrow $1,200. It's absolutely insane. Paul Keel, what happens for someone like to someone like this? Are there any solutions or any way out of this?
Well, there are, you know, there are usually solutions that are community-based, and usually the options talked about are community banks or credit unions, like he was obviously not having a good experience with. I mean, I think it's worth acknowledging that it is a problem, you know, someone who has bad credit history and suddenly has a sudden need of credit. It's not an easy problem. But, of course, payday makes it an easy problem, and it's sort of, you know, obviously what we've been saying is it's a false solution. To the problem. There's this immaculate kind of consumer that they construct who's going to use the product in a, you know, perfect way. They're going to borrow it for 2 weeks and then pay it off, and that hardly ever happens. But it is worth acknowledging that it's a tough problem. And, you know, when people talk about solutions to this, there's sometimes the idea that, well, you can outcompete, you know, a payday loan place. But if you, you know, I'm in California or any state that they're active or similar types of businesses, they are everywhere. They're on every street corner. Sometimes they're billboards. They're on the radios. So they're very, very present. They're very in your face. They're very clear that this is, you know, there's not an easier way to get money. There's not a way to get money that has less hassle than this. So you have to take that into account, I think, when you're talking about kind of a global solution to this.
All right. Well, thank you for the email. Let's take one call before break. Let's go to Alex in San Francisco. Hi, Alex.
Hi. Thank you. I was wondering why they don't give people options of getting the pay or whatever in cash instead of check. That way they don't have to go chasing for somebody to cash their check at such usurious rates, fees. The other thing is payday loans, whoever is paying them, why don't they extend them these credits in the first place instead of going somewhere to the loan sharks?
All right. Well, thank you for the call. I don't know about cash. I mean, these days, employers want to directly put your check into your bank account electronically. But I'll ask our guests right after we take a quick break. Today, we are talking about the expanding payday lending industry. These are these corner stores you see with the bright lights that say payday lending. Inside, they've got a list of how much they charge. It's all very straightforward. Interest rates are as high as 400%. The average customer ends up in debt for 5 months and pays $520 in finance charges. This is a $50 billion industry. There are currently 23,000 payday lending storefronts and now hundreds of websites. We'll talk more about how this industry is moving online right after a break.
This is Your Call on KALW Local Public Radio. If you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question you feel that needs to be answered, please get in touch by calling 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org at any time or post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll have a conversation with Alan Weissman. He's out with a new book called Countdown, Our Last Best Hope for a Future on Earth. 1 million people are born every 4.5 days around the globe. He traveled to 20 countries to ask this question. How many humans can the planet hold without capsizing? So do you think that's the right question to ask, or should we focus on how we can all live more efficiently with the planet's resources? And then on Thursday, we'll have a conversation about the new documentary After Tiller. It looks at the assassination of Dr. George Tiller in 2009 in a Kansas church. You might remember that he provided third trimester abortions. There are only 4 doctors that do this in the country, and this film looks at what they face on a regular basis, including death threats. So we'll be talking about what abortion providers are facing across the country on Thursday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or leave a comment on our website. Today we are talking about the payday lending industry. It's a $50 billion industry. If you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. If you've used one of these payday lending storefronts, what was your experience like? Why did you use it? If you work in this industry, what do you think about the interest rates that are as high as 400%? We did invite Greg Larson to join us. He's a spokesman for the California Financial Service Providers Association. They represent 2,000 California payday lenders, but we didn't hear back. We are joined by Paul Keel. He covers these issues for ProPublica. His ebook is The Great American Foreclosure Story. Gary Rivlin is an investigative fund reporting fellow at the Nation Institute. His latest book is Broke USA, From Pawn Shops to Poverty, Inc., How the Working Poor Became Big Business. And Paul Leonard is California director of the Center for Responsible Lending, and they keep a close eye on this industry. Paul Leonard, what were your thoughts on Alex's comment before the break? I can't imagine any employer would pay in cash, of course, unless it's happening under the table.
No, that's correct. Most employers are, in fact, moving even away from regular paper paychecks and often are looking for electronic direct deposits into their employees' accounts, which is actually a really good, safe, and fast way for employees to access their money without having to pay for check cashing fees. And in some cases, even more insidious kinds of payment methods like payroll cards that actually will require their employees to incur additional fees on top, just to above and beyond, or on a regular basis to access their hard-earned money. So I think the idea of paying in cash is probably not the best solution. When there are a number of lenders and employers who are looking at using employers as a method for delivering short-term cash advances. Of course, that was the kind of historical norm, that that employees could get advances from their employers on the earnings that they have already that they've earned before they before payday. That is an increasingly common. There are a number of new innovative companies out there, both lenders, payroll services, and in some cases even direct employers. Like here in the Bay Area, there's a Rubicon Bakery in Richmond, California. The owner there offers his employees no interest loans when they run into a pinch, not because it's a financially lucrative proposition, but because it's a way of keeping his employees and helping them to meet their economic needs.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because I wanted to ask you, what are the alternatives out there? I mean, are companies trying to provide loans with cheaper interest rates? I read about one called Lend Up, and they've got backers like Google, Kleiner Perkins Caulfield, and they want to charge about 15% plus fees. So if you took out a $250 loan, you'd have to pay back about $294 after 30 days. So do you think this is growing? And if so, how do you reach the people that are going to these storefronts?
Well, I think that there are, especially here in the San Francisco Bay Area, there are a number of innovative companies who are using technology in a very sophisticated way to try and identify good borrowers who meet some basic underwriting criteria and have an ability to repay the loan, and then offering them loans that are affordable but allow those companies to make a profit. The economics of this business are not easy. In fact, as you know, as a number of guests have mentioned already, a payday lender isn't making a profit on their loan until after a borrower has taken out 5 or 6 loans back to back. So, you know, if you just think about it for a second, the idea of charging 15% interest on a $300 loan only provides you a couple of dollars of fees, and that doesn't begin to cover the cost of doing a really strong job of underwriting and evaluating the borrower's ability to repay or potential losses. So the economics are hard, but I think that there are both technology and banks who are already serving these customers have the capacity to deliver much better, much less expensive products.
And so why aren't they?
Excuse me?
Why aren't they?
Well, I think in the case of big banks, I think one of the biggest reasons is that because they have been offering customers much more expensive overdraft fees rather than lower cost credit products. They have been making big, big money off their overdraft fees, and they have been very reluctant to cannibalize their own profits from these overdraft fees with more favorably priced, more responsible products.
So, Gary, where does this leave someone who needs a loan? Because if you have these reputable startups that are trying to offer loans with lower interest rates, and then all of these online payday lending sites with no regulation, how do you know which one is reputable?
I mean, you're putting your finger on the real issue here. That, as Paul Keel said earlier, that you know this is a really hard problem. I mean, people living on $20,000, $30,000 a year, of course they're going to be running out of money, and there aren't many alternatives. I was really interested in this question of what kind of alternatives there are out there. And, you know, I found a credit union in North Carolina that was offering a payday loan at an APR of 12% to its customers. These are state employees and teachers. And the guy who runs it told me it's the single most profitable product they have. But there's so few and far between these alternatives. Yes, there's some interesting startups doing interesting things, trying to do interesting things in Silicon Valley. Yes, right there in San Francisco, you've got nonprofits and credit unions offering an alternative product. But look at what they're up against. I mean, these are multi-billion dollar businesses that have big marketing budgets. These are the payday lenders. They have storefronts. I mean, as you've said a couple of times in talking about this issue, bright lights, they look like the McDonald's of finance, fast food finance. And so they're on store corners. They're advertising just by being. They have marketing budgets. They're paying for ads. They're paying for mailers and all. And you have some credit union that's trying to offer it as a product. So they're a tiny speck up against the payday lending industry. So the truth is that borrowers don't really have many alternatives. I mean, you look at pawn loans, they're expensive, but they're less expensive than a payday loan, and you're not going to fall into a trap. You're not going to keep on bringing in the same TV you can't to get money against it. So, you know, the best alternatives out there are things like pawnbrokers, because they're only charging, depending on the state, 50, 100%, 200% a year interest rather than 400% interest.
Look, I think what we really need is some consistent rules of the road, and I think that we can look towards the Federal Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that for the first time through the Dodd-Frank Act has the power and authority to set national standards to regulate risky financial products, including payday, and specifically including payday loans. While the CFPB is not authorized to set any kind of interest rate limitations, they are in a position to establish some standards requiring some basic underwriting of determining about the borrower's ability to repay a loan. This is common sense in lending world, except in the payday lending industry, where they're making loans to borrowers that they know cannot afford to repay those loans. So they can make loan. The CFPB can establish some federal regulations that govern all kinds of small dollar lending, payday, online, storefront, bank, all across the board, to establish some basic underwriting standards, to establish some basic limitations on the number of loans and how quickly borrowers can take loans one after the other, to provide cooling national kinds of cooling off periods, and various other steps that for the first time, we hope the CFPB will be enacting regulations probably early next year that will establish some national standards and provide some rules of the road for all lenders to sort of live by. And as Gary pointed out, the fact is that the payday lenders make it so easy. It's almost like it's an entitlement to get a loan. And that's not the way the lending business is really supposed to work. And that doesn't work to the best interests of borrowers who are strapped for cash and who will end up in a situation where they're deeper in debt than when they started out.
Well, and until then, you've got a patchwork of laws. Because again, and Paul Keel, how were these 15 states able to make payday loans illegal when in California, a Senate Bill 515 would have capped the number of loans to 6 per year? And in April, this bill was defeated in the state's Senate Banking and Financial Institutions Committee. So if we can't even get a cap of 6 in this state, how were these 15 states able to make payday loans illegal?
Well, it depends on when they did it. I mean, I think there's actually one funny example in Georgia where there's another type of very high-cost credit called installment loan, and I discovered that those lenders actually helped make payday lending illegal, which makes more business for them. So, you know, sometimes it's not so great the way it works out. Sometimes the states never change their laws to make it legal, and therefore it's de facto illegal. And then it's also worth pointing out that there are states that have made it illegal, and they've continued doing business under legal loopholes, like in Ohio, where the legislature voted, you know, after allowing it, the legislature passed a bill in 2008 to ban it, and then there was a vote, you know, the public, you know, two to one voted to ban it, and they're still operating under this loophole. They operate in Texas under a big loophole. So there's literally like thousands of payday lenders, you know, locations that are operating in those states that don't have a clear kind of, you know, blessing from the state legislature. And it's also worth pointing out that when there are votes by the public as opposed to the state legislatures, lately they've gone very much against payday lenders. So when you actually take this to voters directly, you know, it doesn't go so well for them. But as we've said, they're very well funded. They have great lobbyists. They are very generous with campaign contributions. So as long as they can keep it in the state house, they do pretty well. I mean, the California defeat is worth putting in context of Washington, which actually did pass a bill that limited to 8 per year, and they've seen, you know, the volume of payday loans, you know, fall substantially because, as we've said, that the whole business model is to get people, you know, renewing these over and over again. So the industry knows that's kind of an existential threat to their profits, so they fight it tooth and nail.
And that is Paul Keel. He covers consumer finance for ProPublica. Gary Rivlin is an investigative fund reporting fellow at the Nation Institute. And Paul Leonard is California director of the Center for Responsible Lending. And today we're talking about the payday lending industry. It's a $50 billion a year industry. There are 23,000 payday lending storefronts, hundreds of websites. In fact, the online arm of payday lending is exploding. Online payday loans were up 10% last year. They now make up close to 40% of the total market. The interest rates are as high as 400%. The average person ends up in debt for 5 months and pays $520 in finance charges. And if you'd like to join us, if you have done business with one of these storefronts or maybe online, what was your experience like? And if you work in this industry, we'd love to hear from you. We did try to get Greg Larson with the Financial Services Providers Association in California to join us, but they didn't call us back. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have another email from a listener who says, I have used payday lending, and when I have been unable to pay, I was riddled with phone calls claiming that I would be sued and would have charges of check fraud if I didn't pay. I have also had lender collection agencies go as far as to act as a law enforcement agent. It can be terrifying to get involved with these loan sharks. Paul Leonard, how common is this?
Well, you hear about collections violations all the time. Those practices are against the law in California, and yet the reports of improper collection, strong-arm collection threats are fairly common, and they're very hard for the state to enforce. If borrowers are receiving these kinds of inappropriate tactics, they should definitely get in touch with the California Department of Business Oversight. that is the government agency that regulates payday lending, and make sure that they file a formal complaint and let them know what entity is doing this to them, and make sure that they push for a strong and effective response.
And how do you explain the defeat of Senate Bill 515, which would have capped the number of loans to 6 per year in California?
Well, you know, we have been working in the California legislature for the last 5 or 6 years. We have generally been pushing a 36% rate cap, which has been the legislative measure that has been most successful in a number of other states and on ballot initiatives in Arizona, Ohio, and in Montana. When it was clear that a 36% rate cap was not going to move, largely because the payday lending industry lobbyists convinced the legislators that eliminating and getting rid of the payday lending industry in California would be a bad thing, we opted for a compromise position that would limit the payday loans to the short-term emergency kinds of products as they are advertised. We proposed a 6-loan limit. As Paul mentioned, in Washington State, a similar 8-loan-per-year limit in Washington reduced the overall volume of payday lending by 75% in 2 years. What that means is that 75% of all payday loans were going to borrowers who had already taken out 8 loans in a given year. 75% decline. So we thought 6 loans was a reasonable number. Once every 2 months may address somebody's frequent but somewhat a reasonable degree of emergencies that happened. But yet the reality is that the payday industry has a whirlwind lobbying operation in Sacramento, and we're able to convince the legislators and the leadership of the Senate Banking Committee that while this proposal was explicitly intended to allow payday loans to exist in a more limited and more controlled fashion to avoid the worst of the payday lending debt trap, the industry said this would kill the industry, would wipe them out, would create no alternatives and leave borrowers high and dry with no options whatsoever.
And Gary, I mean, the 6-limit cap doesn't really do anything for the person who's struggling to make ends meet. Right.
Well, it means they'll be paying that much less in fees over the course of the year, rather than taking out 10 or 12 or 14 of them. They can't take out more than 6. But yes, the real problem here is that there aren't affordable alternatives. The big banks, as has been pointed out already, they're not getting involved in it because it would just cannibalize their own business. There's been some well-meaning efforts that are very smart. That are making some headway, but they're not coming close to providing the kind of alternative that there needs to be, because there really is a serious problem out here for people who need a little bit of extra money at the end of the month and don't have a credit card. I mean, a credit card cash advance is no solution, but at least it's 25, 30, 35% APR a year rather than in the hundreds of percent.
We have an email from Jan who says a humane scheme for helping people with debt is called LendingClub.com. I know nothing about this, but it's an online financial community that says it brings together creditworthy borrowers and savvy investors so both can benefit financially. They replace the high cost and complexity of bank lending with a faster, smarter way to borrow. Have any of you heard of this Lending Club?
Yes, I have. It is a large online peer-to-peer lending platform that allows borrowers, and it's sort of an eBay for lending, as it were. I think the most important thing with respect to the kinds of emergency needs we're talking about in the advertisement that we just heard for Lending Club is that it's about creditworthy borrowers. And my understanding is that folks who have damaged credit or have shaky credit are not likely to get their credit needs met. It also requires you to kind of go through and have a degree of savviness in terms of navigating the internet lending platform that it offers. It may very well be a good solution for lots and lots of people, but I don't think it's a particularly good solution for the financially strapped lower-income folks who are taking out payday loans.
All right.
Though it does suggest to me a potential solution. The fundamental flaw in the payday product is that the person who's so desperate for $300 today that they'll be willing to take out a fee that works out to 400% interest, is that in 2 weeks they're not going to have the money above and beyond their regular expenses, their rents, car insurance, what have you. And so it's an all or nothing proposition. You either pay it all off, or you roll the loan over, or in some states they don't let you do that, so you just you take out a second loan and then pay back the first. But if you allow people to pay on installment, okay, how about $50 every other week, then we're not talking about a trap. But the payday lenders, none of the big firms that I spoke with would even listen to talk about installment loans.
Well, and Gary, and thanks again, Jeannie, for writing in and trying to help. But Gary, because we couldn't get a spokesman from the industry, I mean, how do they respond to your questions about why they charge such high interest rates? How can they justify this?
Well, and Paul Leonard suggested the answer is it's expensive to run a store that does nothing but provide payday loans, or maybe they do check cashing too, right? You have to pay the rent, put on the lights, pay an employee. So it's a big overhead business. And you know, 5% of these loans go bad. People don't pay them back. They just skip out.
Right.
And so the game in the payday lending industry isn't to open up a store or two stores and get rich. It's to open up hundreds and hundreds of stores. Because if each store is making $10,000 a month, you multiply that by 12 months times 1,000, 2,000 stores, and then you're talking about millions. I mean, I profile one guy in my book that started off, he was a debt collector that said, hey, this payday lending thing seems like a good idea. I can make 500% interest on my money. And within 10 years, he was making post taxes $20-25 million a year in profit.
Wow.
But the key is that he had 1,300 stores.
Hmm. Well, let's take another caller, Chris in San Francisco, who's in the debit card business. Hi, Chris. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks. Good morning. One of the problems about the whole payday loan business is we issue debit cards. We are non-associated debit cards. So people that don't have regular bank accounts can apply for one of our cards.
Hey, Chris, sorry, can I ask you to speak up just a bit?
Oh, sure, sorry.
Much better, thank you.
So people without a bank account can apply for one of our cards, and when they get the card, which is a MasterCard or a Visa, they also get the ability to have direct deposit, just like a regular bank account. And once they have that ability to have for direct deposit, we started to offer them basically payroll advance. So we offered them a payroll advance, knowing that we would get repaid because we were going to see the direct deposit, and we charged $2.50 per 20, which meant $12.50 per 100. And they were allowed to roll it over only once. And the majority of the loans were never for more than $100 to $150, sometimes $200, because these were folks that were trying to reach the next week, not the next month, but the next week. We were then had told by our bank, our issuing bank, who I won't name, but we were told by our issuing bank that we had to discontinue the program. Mm. And we had to discontinue the program because the regulators did not want an issuing bank to be behind a payroll advance a program. However, our payroll advance program didn't require, as one of your folks said earlier, didn't require the bank to front the money. We were fronting the money. The bank had no exposure other than the fact that they were the issuing entity that allowed us to be able to reach out to these folks.
Hmm.
We never had one bad debt in that whole time.
Wow.
The real issue is that the banks themselves do not have the desire to be in this business. They don't want to work with poor folks, but that's the problem.
And yet, but they're investing in it. But Chris, when this launched, what was their response?
I'm sorry?
When it launched, what kind of response did you get?
Huge, absolutely huge. I mean, we had over 17,000. Payroll type customers, and when we introduced it, the program, we just had an immense response. This whole thing of banning it, banning payday loans, and states coming in and saying, "Oh gosh, this is awful, and it's usurious, and we're going to close it down," doesn't mean that the demand goes away. Mm-hmm. All it means is that you're pushing it over to Tony Soprano and his friends.
Right,
which
is what's happening online. Well, Chris, since you work in the industry and you work closely with banks, where do you see this going?
I believe that there are and there will be a number of small local banks probably that will allow program managers, people like ourselves, that are in the money service business, to be able to offer in a very controllable program these type of payroll advances. And as long as the bank feels that they're not either compromising themselves or threatening their charter, then one will probably be able to see on a local basis that happen. Right now, there's Wells Fargo is the only bank that I know of that is able to offer a payroll advance a program. There was another bank called Meta Bank, which is out of Dakota, that got into huge trouble with this. But I think on a local basis, because local banks and probably credit unions, because credit unions are actually much more on the upswing now with the current compliance environment. If you look at the local picture, I think you'll see a much greater understanding on the part of those local banks rather than the big guys.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for calling in, Chris, and sharing your perspective. That was an important one. And we are out of time, so thank you, Chris, for calling in. And thanks to our guest, Gary Rivlin, Investigative Fund Reporting Fellow, author of Broke USA, From Pawn Shops to Poverty, Inc. Paul Keel, as a reporter with ProPublica, author of The Great American Foreclosure Story, and Paul Leonard, California Director of the Center for Responsible Lending. Thank you all for joining us.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call. A million people are born every 4.5 days around the globe. So what questions should we be asking about population growth? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with Alan Weissman, author of Countdown. Weissman traveled to 20 countries to ask, how many humans can the planet hold without capsizing? Is that the right question? Or should we focus on how we can live more efficiently with the planet's resources? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and David LaTulip is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.